we do record each and every one of these. They are going to be available, or this one will be available right after the webinar at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And you can find this one as well as David's previous ones. You might have to scroll back, go a little ways into the pages and pages that we have posted there to find the previous ones. You'll also find various other guests that we've had in the past. And with that, I want to go ahead and get underway. David is really no stranger to us at all. And rather than spending a lot of time doing an introduction, I just want to say, as far as talking about precious metals, you know, silver, gold, whatever, this gentleman knows his stuff. He's not somebody who was hatched yesterday or just does it as a hobby. This guy is in the game, and he really knows stuff. And when he speaks, oftentimes you see those types of trends moving in the direction that he's indicated. And he can certainly go back and analyze what happened, explain it in a way that you understand what has happened, what is currently happening, and then what looks like things are headed towards in the future. So with that, I want to welcome David, and it's really good to have you back again, David.
Well, thank you very much. And
I just wanted to since you were with us last, and I'm not even sure the exact date, but it's been a few months, maybe tell us some of the real important things that have been happening and where you see us at right now in the whole scheme of things, and specifically also with the field that you deal with the most.
Okay.
Tall order, right?
Yeah, always. Well, I think I'll do my normal. First of all, I'll just be myself, and I am going to get to your question, but, you know, with my engineering background, I'm going to build you a watch, but there's a purpose in it, and I don't want to waste any words whatsoever. But for our paid subscribers, people that actually are members of the website, not just the people that are on board for free, I looked at, a rollover of a decade. I mean, basically, silver did a great job from roughly the year 2000 to 2010. But the question I asked of myself, and I thought would be of most benefit to my readership, was what's silver going to do over the next 10 years? And so I started off with that thought and tried to pretend as if I didn't know anything about the silver market and how would I see it. And what I discovered in this study, this research, was that the next 10 years in silver are probably more bullish than the last 10 years. So I'm still very bullish on the silver market. What I also determined was that the industrial demand for silver alone is probably going to put silver back into a deficit situation. We were in a deficit from 1990 to about 2006, and roughly from 2007 to present day, so for 3 or 4 years perhaps, we've been in balance or maybe slightly more than that, according to both of the CPM group and the Silver Institute. And I'm not going to dispute that. I'm not saying actually that I agree with it, but, you know, using their numbers, that's what they say. But the amount of silver that will be used for industrial purposes. Now, let me stop myself briefly and just state that whenever you do a projection on anything for a decade, you're going to make mistakes. There's no question about it. And none of these things are linear. I mean, nothing goes on a straight line. No market, no road, nothing. So, and they are not linear projections, by the way. But it's tough to forecast, you know, for 2 minutes, let alone for 10 years. Having said that, I try to be very conservative. So I looked at what the main industrial uses will be over the next decade. Those are primarily solar energy, water purification, and food processing and packaging, not to mention a lot of other things. I didn't really stress that hard, which would be, of course, any consumer electronics or electrical build-out that is happening in China and will be needed in the United States. In other words, the power grid that services the United States is rather antiquated. And I'm sure a lot of you have seen these ads on TV that talk about upgrading the power grid. I think one of them is by IBM, and there's another major conglomerate that also talks about upgrading the power grid. And, you know, if you know what you're looking at, they're basically signaling to you that, you know, there's going to be necessary changes. And that's going to use a great deal of silver. Well, coming back on point, what I determined after that March study and put out to the members of the Morgan Report was, you know, the next few interviews that I did, you know, people always want to know price, and they always want to know when. And those are two things that really no one can do accurately all the time. But I felt so strong with my research that I said I thought silver could get to $25 by the end of the year. And for a great deal of this year, up until basically the end of August, silver was around 19. So some of the later interviews, I started to back off of that slightly. I mean, I can't take words out of my mouth, and, you know, but as the markets progress, you can't change your opinion on where they're going to go. And I said, well, I'm pretty sure that we're going to get, you know, into the 20s, and whether or not we're going to see 25 or not, you know, I'm not as convinced. Well, obviously, we're almost there today, and we're not even done with October. But we had a very long base building for silver over the last several months, roughly up to about the 19 level, and be bouncing between 19 and 18, roughly, rough numbers, for quite some time. And then we got a breakout around the $19 level, and it's been up, up, and away ever since. So you asked the question, that is, you know, where are we at? And there's so many things coming together right now at the same point in time that it's really hard to know. But there are things that we are pretty certain of. One that we know as an almost certainty is what I've been saying for several years and others as well, that a paper silver doesn't equal real silver. And as funny and as obvious as that is, what that means is that there'll be a day when somebody needs silver, either for industry or investment, and they're not able to get it. Or it's getting the supplies, probably a better way to say it, is that the supply is getting so tight that in order to get it, they're going to have to start paying up to get it quickly, to get it as needed. And we may be there. I mean, the market is certainly acting as if that's the case. We don't know yet. What we do know is the market was trading different. Once the market went through about the 1860 level back around the 20-something, oh, 5th or so of August, I did a video for YouTube for everybody, and I was kind of smiling, and I was happy. I said, there's somebody in the market, and they have size, and the market is trading differently. And that was very apparent for me watching this market almost on a daily basis for over three decades now. Certainly, I don't watch it every single day because I travel so much. And, you know, when I write, I usually am not looking at the market as intently. And I don't stare at the computer the whole time to see every tick. But I do follow the market very closely. And it was apparent to me. So one of them is the physical market trumping the paper market. That's number one. Number two is what took place earlier this year with the meeting with the CFTC. And during that meeting, you got to hear both sides, and I've watched that more than once. And as I've stated so many times, that a market doesn't care for a very long time whether the selling is being done in the physical realm or in the paper realm. But a very long time isn't forever. And again, we may be at that threshold right now. But that's just repeating what I just said. So here's the new material. During that inquiry, some of the guys on the silver side that were pro-manipulation pointed out to the CFTC so clearly you would have to be unconscious not to understand what they were saying. And one of the primary ones was the bank participation report, where the banks had sold, I forget the number, but it was like 20% of the world's silver supply in about 4 milliseconds. I mean, that's the idea. They just sold a massive amount at one time. And anyone that knows the basics of a market, doesn't matter if it's the silver market, the soybean market, the stock market, or an automobile that's going to be sold. If there's a lot of buying pressure, the price will go up, and if there's a lot of selling pressure, the price will go down. There's no reason in the world for a bullion bank that wants to get the best price for their product to sell tons of it instantly. There's only one purpose for doing that, and that's to drive the price down. Now, the motivation could be many-fold, and I don't want to go into a lot of the motivations, but the facts are it's to drive the price down. So let me tell everyone where I stand on manipulation, because my stance is pretty much in the middle, but it's what I truly believe. I'm not being in the middle because I want to be. I'm being in the middle because it's exactly the way I see the markets. One, a market's overall trend cannot be manipulated. The free market is greater than any bank, and the main trend for gold and silver have been up. However, within that main trend, the market could be manipulated, and it is, again and again and again. Would the markets be higher without those interventions? Certainly they would be higher than they are now. However, you cannot stop the main trend. There's too many little guys, too much force in the market collectively that will and can overpower. And the other thing with the gold and silver markets that are unique is not only the fact that they're money, but they're only commodities that not only are money, but you can take and hold, and you don't have any real downside like you'd have holding beans or wheat or corn or cotton or any other commodity that has, you know, perhaps bugs to get into it or whatever. I mean, these are metals that'll stay in that form basically forever. So when these markets are so oversold from the aspect of how many derivatives are out there for every physical ounce, you can see the problem. So you've got the CFTC thing in the background, and then recently Bart Chilton came out and did a video, and I sent it out to everybody, my paid subscribers and the people on our free mailing list, and I said, take a look at this. And Bart said that he expects that the CFTC will make an announcement about their findings on the silver market that they've been investigating for the last 2 years. And then he alluded to that if they, the CFTC, didn't, that he probably would. So that was rather startling news. I got that from one of my friends early in the morning. And again, I put it out for everybody to look at. So we don't know what they're going to say. And then the third item, and there's several items, I'm just giving you the top three the way I see them, is there's been a rumor out for quite some time that J.P. Morgan, that not only holds the largest short position in the silver market, but holds the lion's share of all the derivatives that are out there, might be in a legal bind relative to their silver antics, we might call it. Now, that's a rumor, and I want to state that again very clearly, because I don't have any inside information. I have read certain internet sites. Some of these guys are pretty good friends of mine that have said that. I don't have any proof of that. Wouldn't shock me that that's the case, but I don't know. So you've got a potential CFTC bomb, a potential, you know, legal question. You've got a situation where perhaps the physical market is starting to trump the paper market, and then you've got a new buyer out there. So you have all of these things coming together at one time, and because of, you know, and I don't know if any of them are influencing the price, but certainly any of them could, and all of them together would certainly influence the price. What we know for a fact is the price has shot up, you know, $6 almost in a very, very short amount of time. And that's what silver does. I mean, and then there's other commodities going up as well. I mean, gold's done quite well. But at the start of this run, from basically 1st of September through the 13th of October, however many trading days that is, the ratio, the gold-silver ratio was 68 to 1 September 1st. It's now 57 to 1. So what that tells all of us for a fact is that silver has outperformed gold significantly, even though gold is certainly doing quite well and making new highs all the time. So that's, I think, the most important, in my view, items that are, you know, unknowns, but very, very important as we move forward. Will the CFTC come out and set new position limits? I don't know. I'll make one more comment on that, and then maybe we have some questions. And that is Ben Hind, who will be with me in London when I'm speaking to the fund managers on this next trip to Europe, said that the banks, from his work or what he thinks, is that they are not trading in the same manner that they were before. And from what I'm able to determine, I agree with him. You're not seeing a lot of short covering taking place that you were before. And this is different. I mean, you know, I don't think, this is a belief, not a proof, I don't know. I think since the CFTC meeting made it so clear to these guys that denied it, the other side basically denied it. They said this is just business as usual, and that's the way the markets work, and they said all this stuff. But for now that everyone knows how to read the bank participation report and understands what it says and how it moves the market, I don't think you're going to see any bank come in and sell, you know, 20-25% of the world's silver supply in 3 milliseconds again. I just don't think that's going to happen. That's what Ben says, and that's what I'm saying. So what that means is that these bullion banks that want to cover their positions on paper are probably not going to be able to manipulate the market with the force that they were able to do it in the past, because there may be somebody looking over their shoulder. There may not be. I don't know. I'm not inside the CFTC to know, you know, how serious they are about this. I mean, it's taken 2 years to get this far, and basically nothing's happened yet, but that doesn't mean something can't happen in the future.
Okay.
So Earl, I think, you know, we got any questions? I don't know how they queue up or don't.
Okay, actually, I just wanted to remind everybody that we are speaking and David Morgan, and he is with Stone Investment Group, or I believe the site is silver-investor.com. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And I failed to mention earlier, and I think most of the people who are regular listeners would know, but maybe there are other people that don't. We invite everyone to join in the discussion. It certainly is your webinar as well as ours, and we all co-create it together. So if you want to speak with David, if you have a question for him, go ahead. If you're on the conference bridge line, dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll be able to unmute your line individually and make sure that you're able to ask your question. And then if you're on the Internet, what you would do is that link that you utilize to come to the webinar, just go ahead and type your question in that small box right underneath that link. And it would be helpful if you put maybe at least a first name and a city and state, and that would let us know who and where. And then we'll make sure that your question is asked of David. So with that, I want to invite people to go ahead and participate. And at this point, I know that David, you've been very clear with what you've had to say. We do have Weaver in Amphill, Virginia. He asks, if Federal Reserve notes, dollars, have nothing backing them of value, why would the owner of gold or silver or other precious metals exchange their metal for Federal Reserve notes, or are they really buying the land of the United States real estate, or are they buying the people as chattel, or both? Interesting question.
That's a pretty interesting question. Well, you could argue a lot of different facts on it. Prima facie evidence in a court of law, they're backed by nothing. As far as how you keep the game going, it's based on the full faith and credit of the United States. So what does that mean? The full faith and credit of the United States means the ability of the federal government to tax their federal citizens and gain access to their their ability to tax. So chattel, I think it might be too strong a word. So you could also make that argument, because that's what those fancy words mean. But why would anyone trade, you know, gold or silver? Well, that's a personal choice, and as long as they work, they work. I mean, if you're a bullion dealer and you're making 4 or 5% a day, that's a lot of money over time. You know, if you're selling $1 million worth of gold per day average, and you're making 4% on that or 5% every day, you're going to take that and you're going to do what with it? Well, you can't eat gold. We all know that. So you're going to buy a house and a car and another house, and I don't know what these guys buy. Some of these bullion dealers do quite well. Some don't. Most don't. It's like any business. There's not a lot at the very, very top, but nonetheless, there are some that are. So certainly, if you got to, you know, make a real estate transaction, you're going to have to do it in dollars, or send your daughter to school, you're going to have to do it in dollars. So there's lots of reasons why they would do it. You can't make a direct transaction in gold very easily. You could with me, probably, for certain, you know, items I have. I mean, I've accepted silver from my newsletter several times, but it's just not the way that, you know, you do transactions. So that's the reason why. So, and I'll read a little bit into your question, and that could be, well, will there be a day where the, you know, Federal Reserve note is worth absolute zero? And if that's the case, then, you know, certainly you're not going to trade your gold or anything for a dollar. And normally before that happens, there's a new monetary system. I mean, these bankers are not idiots. They're all about control. They're way beyond just money. They're about power and control. So there's, you know, a time when things get very iffy, and that's when they usually come out with some type of a new monetary system proposal. And they build the public up to that. I mean, you've already seen many things in the mainstream press. It sounds like me 10 years ago about, you know, Russia's commented that, you know, they're not so sure that the United States dollar should be the reserve currency of the world, you know, much longer. You've had several nation states that have made similar comments. The IMF has come out and said they're looking at some alternative to the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency. Maybe they're going to go back to the SDR, special drawing rights, which are a paper gold scam. So, you know, there's a lot there. So, you know, hopefully probably beat your question to death, but that's what I tend to do. So, Earl, we got another one? Hello, Earl?
Yes, we do. We have some questions, and we have in New Hampshire, we have Exeter, New Hampshire, we have David. Are you there, David?
I am, yes. Great. Thank you very much. David, David Morgan, I really appreciate your level-headedness. You're one of the only guys out there that seems to be get your head screwed on straight, and you're not going off the deep end, and I really appreciate your insights and comments. My question has to do with derivatives of silver. Is it just ETFs, and is it just the fact that it's not tied to silver? And what is the ratio of physical to derivatives in silver?
Okay. All right, you've asked a couple questions there, really, but and very good questions. All right, let's just look at the silver derivatives, okay? First of all, just from a general top-down analysis, silver and gold are the only commodities or only assets that are commodities or you can consider commodities that are treated as financial instruments. What does that mean? What that means is they have a derivatives exposure of roughly 100 to 1, which is the same exposure that you get in the cash currency markets throughout the world or the bond markets throughout the world. So from a financial-only perspective, if you had a column of financial assets on the left-hand side of a spreadsheet and it was blacked out so you couldn't see what they were, but in that column were bonds, currencies, and gold and silver, they'd all appear about the same. So from a financial derivatives aspect, they're traded almost like from a ratio standpoint like a currency. Now, is the 100 to 1 the exact amount? No. No one knows the exact amount, but I've got that on tape myself way before Jeff Christian commented at the CFTC. I was, I'll digress again, but I started a TV show on the internet before YouTube was ever invented, and it was called Mining Industry Review, and it was my show, and the first person I had as my first guest was Jeff Christian from CPM Group, but I did it for a very important reason. I wanted to get the truth to everybody to see how Bullion Bank actually operates, what the ratios are, what the derivatives a multiplier is, and that type of thing. And I've got that still somewhere in my archives here. So are the ETFs the only derivatives? And the answer is no. And some ETFs really aren't derivatives, and let me explain. And there's a difference between an ETF and a holding company. Like Central Fund of Canada is audited outside, and that's a bullion holding company. Bullion Management Group of Canada is a bullion holding company. The Silver Trust is going to be started by Sprott Asset Management in Canada, a bullion holding company. The Silver Trust that will be started by Stefan Spicer of Central Fund of Canada, which is just for silver, will be a silver holding company. The ETF, it's called an ETF, from the Zurich Continental Bank, is actually a silver holding company. Now, the SLV is an ETF, and whether or not all that silver is there or not is important, but it's not important from a legal perspective. And the reason it's not important from a legal perspective is read the prospectus. Read what you are buying. You know, you always say that, yes, I agree to these terms, and then you start trading, and the terms are that you have to settle in cash. And in the prospectus, it says it's a derivative that tracks the price of silver. It doesn't say it's 100% backed by silver. Nowhere in that document does it say that. The other derivative, so it's a bit of a problem. I'm neutral on the ETF. I think it's done more good than bad on balance because it's got a lot of people interested in investing in silver, but it wouldn't be my, you know, prime asset for holding silver. Another part that's not addressed very often is the silver certificate program. And what that is going to a bank like Scotia Macata or HSBC or most of your bigger bullion banks or even your large investment banks that have investments, such as Merrill Lynch even, will offer their clients to purchase silver through them and hold it for them and issue a certificate against it. And I believe that there's been a lot more of that paper silver out there or derivative than exists in the physical realm. And that's a different problem than the problem that you have with an ETF, because the ETF doesn't ever promise to pay you in silver. But a silver certificate that says that they're holding it for you, and if they don't really have it and there's a bank run type of an event where it wouldn't even have to be 100% of the people that are holding the certificate. I mean, if they have a cover ratio of 100-1, it would only take, you know, 1%. So take more than 1%, take 2% to cause them a problem. If it's a cover ratio of 1/10, it'd take more than 10% to cause them a problem. So, you know, what's the exact cover ratio on the certificate program? It would be an individual-by-individual-by-individual case, and I'm not trying to be fun. I'm trying to be very explicit here. There are probably some certificate programs out there by banks that are on the up-and-up, and they only issue certificates for the amount of silver that they hold in their vault. There's probably some that are like that, but I don't think all of them. In fact, I don't think. I know that not all of them operate that way. They operate on the fractional reserve system, and they say, well, only 10% of the people at most ever want the silver. All they want is the price appreciation of it, and so we really only need to hold this much, and we can take their money and use it for whatever, you know, purposes they see fit. And if anybody, you know, comes to get their silver, we'll try to talk them out of it, and in last resort, well, we'll give it to them. But most of the time, we'll be able to get them a check and, you know, take care of, you know, business as usual. So that's a problem in the derivatives market. Another problem is what goes on, you know, in the futures markets and in the LBMA. In the futures markets, again, if you read the contract, the futures exchange or the clearing brokers are allowed to settle in cash if they have to. So if you were long silver at, say, 19, and you're still holding and, you know, you got an inheritance or something. So, you know, I really don't want this paper contract anymore. I'm going to call up my broker. I'm going to pay for all of it in cash. I'm going to pay the extra fees and a little bit of storage that's involved and the Brinks truck coming out here. And none of that really adds up to that much of the cost, by the way. But I'm going to pay all this additional stuff, and I'm going to have the silver delivered to me. Well, if, unless you have that certificate in your hands today, and if you're going to do this tomorrow, and I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow, I'm going to be very clear. What I'm saying is anything that isn't already owned outright right now and in a warehouse or a COMEX-approved bank for storage, there is a possibility that in the future they have the option to say, you know what, you can't take delivery, you have to settle for cash. And that's in the contract. So I'm not saying that's going to happen. It's just their way of protecting themselves and not you. That if the, you know, if the stuff hits the fan, so to speak, and too many people are standing for delivery at the wrong time for them, they have the option of saying, you know, all bets are off. Your contract is worth this much. We'll pay you the cash equivalent, but you're not getting the silver. So that's the COMEX. Now we'll move on to LBMA. And I haven't read their contract, so I don't want to misspeak anything, but we know some facts from the past. When the nickel market went ballistic a few years ago, what the LBMA did was they absolutely forced the people that actually own the physical nickel to lease it back on their terms, on the LBMA's terms, to the users that needed it. I mean, you talk about a non-free market. And so I would expect if there ever got a real crunch in the silver market at the LBMA, they'd do something similar to what they did in the nickel market. So I don't have any proof of what the contract reads for LBMA contracts. I've never seen it. But I also know and look at the markets very closely. Their derivative exposure is not as publicly available as what it is at the CME, the Commodities Exchange. But knowing how much gold and silver they trade on paper every day relative to how much physical there is, it's astronomical, and 100 to 1 would probably kind on our side is probably much greater than that. But the bottom line is what I said earlier, and that is the physical market is far more important for all of them, and they know that. I mean, the reason, in my view, that the Silver Users Association was started way back when was for one thing and one thing only, and that was for the users to form a cartel or consortium to be able to source silver and keep the price pretty much in line with what their needs were and source it directly through the large base metal miners and their smelting and refining facilities. And that's the way it's been for many, many years. So, you know, you don't really have to worry too much about, you know, Kodak running out of silver or Tiffany's running out of silver or Dow Chemical running out of silver or DuPont running out of silver, although it could happen. What you would have to consider is somebody new on a block, like somebody that's building massive amounts of solar panels or solar reflectors, which use even more silver, that comes in and gets a large contract from, let's say, the government. And they have to put up all these solar collectors, and they're not in with the Silver Users Association, and they've got to go to the free market to buy silver. Now, that could cause a little disruption in the silver price. So I've just, you know, thought through several things for you. Hopefully I've probably, again, over-answered your question, but if I didn't, come back at me, and I'll be happy to continue.
Did you have some more?
Great. Just one. Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure, go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay, just quickly, I want to just clarify. Earlier you said that 20% of the physical silver was traded in nanoseconds, right? So just to get the ratio right, where with both the commodities and the physical silver, you've got 101% of the physical, 101 times the physical silver value, right? And they traded 0.2% of the physical in one day. Of that amount in derivatives, essentially, to make the 20% drop in one day, right?
I think you did the math right. I mean, basically, the silver market in the physical realm produces, depends on which study you use, but roughly 600 million ounces in a year. And so 10% of that, 60 million, so about 120 million ounces. So 120 million ounces on paper in basically a mouse click was sold. Somewhere in that realm. It might be 25. I forget the exact number. But the idea is what's important. No one would dump that much silver on the market. There's no reason. No one's going to sell something they own for the lowest price they can get. And yet this happens in the precious metals all the time. I mean, that's an example. The other example is look at the Bank of London. I mean, when they sat there and sold their gold, I don't know if you're involved in the markets then or not. I mean, they were selling to the lowest bidder, and they were just, I mean, it was just the most insane thing you'd ever witness in your life. Any sane person would say, something doesn't add up here. Why are they taking the lowest bid for their gold? This is insane. But that, you know, this is typical of what happens in these metals markets.
Anything else that you wanted to ask of David?
I'm off that. Thank you very much. I'd love to speak with him for hours, but that's another paid call, I would suspect.
Okay. Okay, thanks so much for your participation. I'm going to go on to the next person. We've got in BC, we've got someone that is, it looks like they're in South Kamloops, BC. Are you there, guest? Do you have a question?
Yes, I am. It's Ken Aberdeen. David, I'm a subscriber and very much appreciate, like your last comment there, very much appreciate the insight and the lack of fever that you always bring to everything when everything's overheating in the real world. You're a voice of calm, which is greatly appreciated. A couple quick questions was, short term, are we still thinking that we're going to have a pullback in the metals and the stocks and maybe the economy as a whole, double dip type situation? Or is that sort of on the back burner in your mind? And are we in a different world in that the price of gold and silver is going to continue to sort of shoot up for a while till we hit the next level of resistance? And a second question is, I'm wondering if you're going to be in Vancouver on the 22nd, 23rd for the Money Talks Precious Metals Conference.
Okay. Well, answer the second one first. That's easy. No, I'm not going to be able to do the World Outlook Conference. I actually, at times, tend to overcommit, and I don't like to do that. I like to always live my commitments. But it turned out that that conference is right adjacent to the Silver Summit here in Spokane, and I'd actually had to leave the summit conference early, which was actually my brainchild, to make it to the World Outlook Conference. So I begged off with Nina, and she's a very understanding person, and I hated to do it to her, but no, so I won't be there. Back to your question. You know, I really wish I knew the answer because, as I said earlier, the silver market is obviously trading differently. And is it just trading differently because it broke out after, you know, a long consolidation period and, you know, this quantitative easing 2 announcement was made? That's what it appears. But, again, to be cautious, it could be something else. It could be a large buyer that's looking to stand for delivery. It could be some kind of short squeeze even in the paper market that somebody's orchestrating. And those are coulds. From everything I've looked at over all these years, the gold and silver market have not been this overbought, technically, except maybe twice or three times before since 1970. So how many years is that? 40 years. It's only been this overbought three times. Nothing goes parabolic forever. I think that we are going to pull back. I'll pretty much put my reputation on it. What I won't put my reputation on is when. Here's the way I see it from a macro picture. The silver market was actually peaking out for about 4 days around the $22 level, and I actually sold out my position for a quick, you know, $10,000 per contract for two reasons. One, it looked like it was topping on a very short-term basis. Number two, I do what I teach. I have 70% of my position or 75% on at all times. So if I'm wrong and the market keeps going up, I've only, you know, sold into strength and I've still held the lion's share of my investments. And lastly, I was going to Toronto, and I hate having open positions when I'm traveling. They seem to always go against me. In this case, it wouldn't have. But that's what I chose to do. Right after that took place, and it looked like a, you know, a near-perfect trade, after the market closed, I believe it was on a Friday, the Federal Reserve came out and announced this QE2, this quantitative easing 2, and the markets took off in the aftermarket. Gold and silver just shot up overnight like crazy, and that's continued ever since that announcement. It's my contention, as I put out to our upgraded service, that I think it's quite possible that the Federal Reserve did this as a trial balloon. And they came out and made the announcement publicly after the close to see what would take place in the markets. And based on that, make a decision in November when they have their next meeting. So what has happened? Well, the Dow's gone to 11,000. You've had limit up days in the corn market and some of the other ags. You've seen gold and silver go on fire. Basically, all markets are trading as one, the commodities, the stocks, and the currencies. And, of course, the only thing that's going down hard is the dollar. And, of course, just a few short months ago, you know, you had to get out of the euro and into the dollar. Now you got to get out of the dollar and into the euro. I mean, I call this the banker's last vestige of hope to try to teach everybody, like Pavlov's dog, that one currency is superior to another when, in fact, they're all basically not worth the paper they're printed on. But we're not to that point in the financial system yet. So what I believe could happen is that we could see these gold and silver markets and the other markets continue higher for the next couple of weeks even. And then once the Fed comes out after their November meeting and says we've reconsidered, we're not going to have quantitative easing, or even we are, but it's going to be softer than the market anticipated, you might see a sell-off at that point. So I think we're probably pretty close. I'm actually protecting my positions. We've had such a big run. I'm doing it by buying puts. And that's just an insurance policy. I mean, if I lose the money on the put, I haven't lost very much money. But if the market pulls back $2 or $3 in the silver market, I've kept most of my gains by buying that put, or puts in my case. So I'm going to continue to put that out to our subscribers. I appreciate your business very much, and I appreciate the comments. If you have a follow-up question or I didn't answer it thoroughly, go ahead and, you know, ask again or comment on it, whatever you'd like.
No, I appreciate your insight, and that's good, Dave. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Gus. Appreciate that. And now we're going to move to a couple of questions that we have that came over the Internet. We have, Bob in Longview, Washington. Is there any danger of the government taking our rights to own gold again, since the law is still on the books to do just that?
Well, is there? And, you know, you have to answer yes. There is a possibility that it could happen, sure. But I think a deeper, more important question is, you know, where do you stand personally? I mean, I used to end almost all of my lectures with something to the effect that, you know, when gold and silver go sky high in real terms, and these dollars that are becoming worth less, but you've made a lot more of them than anybody else because you're not in real estate and you're not in the stock market, and you're, you know, in other words, you've made real returns even in dollar terms, but because you held precious metals. That isn't the end-all be-all. In other words, if all these gains that you get in the metals markets don't mean anything to me, I'm speaking for myself now, if you've lost everything else, if you've lost your ability to go where you want, when you want, and how you want, if you've lost your ability to speak and say what you need and want to say, in other words, if you've lost your liberty, you have gained absolutely nothing. Nothing. There's no amount of money that can pay for liberty, for freedom. That's the most precious thing that we all have. And without that, it doesn't matter how much money you've got. So that was how I used to end almost every lecture that I gave. So it comes back on you. You know, at what point are you willing? Are you willing to just roll over for somebody knocking on your door and say they want your gold? You bought it when it was free to own it. You know, it is your personal property, you know, and just because somebody says you have to turn it over, I don't think that that will happen. I really don't. I know that there's people that write for my website that do, and I'm about as free market as you'll get. I mean, I will let people that disagree with me post on my website because I personally read the left, I read the right, and I read the middle. You probably can tell pretty much where I stand from, you know, my public statements. But I certainly take all viewpoints. I don't agree with them all. But so I would say, you know, it's on you. You know, I don't want anyone owning, you know, it's a personal choice. But personally for me, I would say, you know, why would I own something? I'm all nervous about it, you know. I mean, I'm not nervous about my silver position or gold position. If someone's going to ask me to give it back, I'm going to say why and under what authority. Basically, if it's some mandate that came after the Constitution, there are several legal cases that prove that nothing usurps the law of the land. So basically, if you go into court with that knowledge and say that, you know what, we're in a constitution that says you have the right to my personal property, well, this little sub-law over here does, so what? You know, this black ace trumps everything. It's called the Constitution. So, and I know we have listeners all over the world probably, but, you know, so I'm just saying stand up. I mean, you know, that's my belief. If you know, if we all lay down, we've gained nothing. If you lost your freedom, you've gained nothing. So, you know, I'm sorry I'm on my diatribe, but it's important. It's more important than any of the medals. I mean, I'll read you my mission statement, and I do this every so often, but it's to teach and empower people to understand the benefits of an honest financial system. Gold and silver are not even in my mission statement. I mean, if we're all telling the truth and everything is transparent, you know, we're going to have a lot better financial system that's going to work properly. But when you've got all these, you know, black box trades and some people are favored more than others and all this nonsense that's been going on for way too long, you're going to have total corruption, which is where we're at now, and you're going to have declining morals that go with the debasement of the currency. And it's the same story again and again and again. It's happened over and over and over again in monetary history or history in general. So, again, I've probably gone too far on that topic, but, you know, ask yourself, why do you own it, and, you know, what price are you willing to pay to turn it over?
Makes sense. Sure does. Well, I think the prevailing mood now of people with all the things that they're reacting to and wanting the right kind of change instead of the change we got and the current, current government that's going on, I think that we're going to see people that have found their voice and are a lot less apt to lay down, as you were talking about. So that's kind of a good trend, I think. Let's see. We have Kevin in Medford, Oregon. Why shouldn't banks and utility companies revolt against the Fed's unilateral charter so they can accept constitutional money, gold and silver measured by a standard of weights and measures?
Great question. I'm going to read a little bit into your question, Kevin, because there have been some cases where legal tender money has been used and it's been questioned. Bernard von Nothaus comes to mind, and that's a kind of a special case, and I don't have time to go into it. Plus, I really don't have all the details. But here's the one that I think would be a fun thought experiment, if nothing else. If you look at the Constitution, what it really says is that no state can settle debt for anything but gold and silver. So what would be really fun for you to do would be to call up your utility and say, you know, I really want to apologize to, somebody there. Let me talk to, you know, the vice president of operations or the CEO or whatever. It doesn't matter who you talk to, but if you talk to a clerk, it's going to go nowhere. So you want to get up the ladder as high as you can get. And you say, you know, I really want to apologize. I think I've been frauding you for all these years with my payments. And they're going to say, what? What have you been doing, Kevin? Well, I'm sorry, but I've been writing you these checks, you know, with these notes. That this unbacked stuff, and I just read the Constitution, and it says, or maybe just ask, it'd be smart to say, well, do I have a debt with you, you know, or do I have a debt every month, and get them to agree that you had a debt, and then you tell them you've been paying it off with the checking account balance, and you think that's fraudulent. I need your help on this because the Constitution says to settle a debt, it has to be in gold and silver coin, and you are a state-run entity, right, or you're in the state of Oregon. And see what they say. Of course, no one's really going to do this, but I've had that thought experiment myself a couple times because I just thought how fun it would be to call up your county tax assessor and tell him, you know, I've been paying my property taxes to the state here, the county that's part of the state, and I think I've been frauding you because I haven't been paying in gold and silver, and I want to make it right. What do I do? Tell me what I need to do because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get in trouble for doing this. Now, no, you know, it's just, again, it's, you know, going back to what the Constitution actually says. No one hardly even knows that. I don't think anyone's even done that. But could it be done? Yeah, I think it could be done. What you really see, let me digress a bit and tell you more of a practical thing, because I'm pretty known to be level-headed and practical, so let's go that route instead. What you see throughout monetary history is as these things start to collapse more and more, as the people do determine what money is. And that's what you start to see. You see, you know, goldmoney.com, where you can actually transact in, you know, grams of gold or ounces of silver or partial ounces of silver. Legally, lawfully, you can do it, okay? So what you start to see is a resurrection of real, honest money back in the system for payments of goods and services. Goldmoney.com is just one. There used to be e-gold. I think there's several more that are similar to that. You had, Liberty Dollar of Bernard von Nothaus before he got into his hot water. So you're starting to see it, and that's what you've seen throughout history, is that the people start to determine what money is, not government. Whether or not a state bank would come up and do it or not, that's going a little bit further out in time. I would certainly encourage it. I like the idea a great deal, but I think there's just too much pressure out there at this point in time where anyone that started it would probably get a lot of heat from the authorities. But certainly it's a worthwhile thing to pursue. And if you ever do get the gumption up to call the utility company or the tax assessor and ask them why they accept something other than gold and silver as payment of debt, I'd sure love to hear the answer.
Okay. We have Bob in Longview, Washington. Have you heard that Obama has a bill on his desk to take away all mining rights and property claims if the U.S. dollar completely goes to zero? I have heard that, but do not know.
Haven't heard it. You know, my business, I used to get more stuff like that than I do now. I think everybody, not everybody I deal with, but most people I deal with are, you know, pretty solid in separating the wheat from the chaff. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. It just sounds, whenever it sounds, you know, too good to be true or too far out to make sense, I usually discard it. I give that a very remote possibility. What it did come in, which was similar, in fact, when Earl started to read it, I thought this was exactly what you were going to say, and then he went on and it wasn't. But there is a bill out there that is not signed yet that basically says if you have a mining claim with the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, and you have any type of mining, previous mining activity on it, so you have an adit, which is just a mining term for a hole in the ground or a hole in the side of the mountain, you've got basically a destructive nuisance on your hand, and you have to adhere to certain new policies to make it safe for the public. So in other words, what the government's proposing or the BLM is proposing is that if you have a mining claim that you're, you know, paying the leases on and you aren't doing any work on it, or even if you are, and you have anything that showed any kind of previous mining activity, it's automatically a hazard to the public, and you're going to have to spend a bunch of money to bring it up to par. And, of course, who gets to inspect and determine, you know, what safe is? Well, they will. So that's something that, you know, I don't like. But that is in existence. It is not law yet, but it's proposed. So that's what I thought you were going to ask me, so I just thought I'd throw that one in.
Okay. Did want to say that, as you know, we're speaking with David Morgan, and his website is silver-investor.com. He's a Stone Investment. And I wanted to say, and we'll be closing the webinar off before long, but if you have just a burning question you want to get in and you're on the phone line, hit *2 on your phone keypad. Or if you're online, then just go ahead and type your question in the question box and submit that to us, and we'll try to get it in before we close off here. David, we do have a question I see here from Rich in Montague, New Jersey. For someone who does not own any precious metals and does not have enough capital to go into gold or platinum, would you recommend starting in silver, a good move to get into the metals market?
Yeah, I would. I would definitely. That's the beauty about the silver market, is it's still relatively cheap to any other precious metals. And I would encourage that. I mean, don't go overboard. If you're of modest means, you know, every dollar probably, you know, means a great deal to you. And there's nothing really more volatile than the silver market. I mean, it is a very volatile market. And so, you know, if you bought in at, you know, $25 tomorrow and then, you know, 2 months from now it's back down to 20, you might not like me very much because I encourage you to get in the silver market. But there is a program that I am very fond of that I participate in. It's called Silver Saver. And you can learn a lot more about it by just going to silver123.net. That's silver, the number 123.net, silver123.net. And there you are able to buy physical silver for as little as, I think, $50 a month. And I've always advocated for a long-term investor or saver to just dollar cost average into the market. So let's say you did that and you elected $20 or $50 a month. and silver's at 25 this month, and then the next month it's at 20, well, you just buy more silver for your $50 on that month. And let's say it went down to 19, you buy more the next month. And then it popped back up to 22 or whatever. You get the idea. As long as you're in a bull market, and we are, over time you'll actually average your price quite well, and you'll do a lot better. And that way you have the discipline of savings and the discipline of dollar cost averaging. So you take a lot of the emotion out of investing that way. So that's something to look at if you wish. It's a good way for, especially I believe, for the small average person. And that's the other thing about the silver market I'll wrap up with, Earl, I'm sure we're about out of time, is that as being the poor man's gold, as it's often called, I laugh for two reasons. One, it seems that in the beginning of the silver market, when no one was paying attention, only the billionaires were interested in the silver market, not the millionaires, but Warren Buffett, arguably the number two richest guy in the world. His friend, Mr. Bill Gates, was involved in Pan American Silver through one of his money managers, is pretty well known. George Soros was involved in Apex Silver, which is really a zinc mine, but was called a silver mine. So you had a lot of billionaires who were involved in silver very early on at the right time. But it still is considered the poor man's gold, and that's why a lot of people that are catching on now to what's going on in the global financial system will move to silver, because gold is beyond their means. You know, if they have enough money to buy 2 ounces of gold, they might forego gold and buy silver because it's more affordable. And that's what happened in the 1979-1980 time frame, and I think it'll happen again on this move.
We've got just a few more minutes, and I think it'd be great right now, David, if you would give whatever contact information that you'd like people to have, and if there's any kind of offer for the listeners, if there's anything like that, then that's fine. It's a good time to do that, if you would.
Okay. Well, it's an Internet-based business, and the easiest way to get there is obviously on the Internet. That's silver-investor.com. And if you can't remember that, if you're driving or something, it's just type David Morgan Silver into the Google search engine or any good search engine, and it'll bring up the website. We don't really do a lot on the phone, although we do have a phone number, especially for our subscribers, because I just dislike Internet businesses that you can't get a hold of somebody. You can't get a hold of us if you need to. When you call that number, you're not going to talk to me, but you will talk to one of our staff. Okay, well, I will put out a something for everybody listening on this. I just did this on another interview about 2 weeks ago. It's only going to go to, I think, the 5th of November when I'm in Europe. I'll give you full access to the members portion of the website. To get there, you're going to have to give me your credit card. I'm not going to let some web bot or somebody that's not serious take all of my precious work that I kill myself on for free. It will be free. I think they dock your credit card $1, but I don't get the dollar. It just stays like in an escrow account for 30 days. You can download everything to your heart's content. So all you have to do is go to silver-investor/AU, the element for gold. And the reason I used AU and not AG was that I was doing a webinar for some people in Australia, and I didn't want them to have to spell it Australia. Plus, I wasn't sure I could spell it off the top of my head anyway, so I used AU. So if you go to silver-investor/AU, you'll be able to, it'll pop up a form for free. You fill out your information so we know you're real, and you will be gaining access to the Basic Plus service, which is everything I do, including the trades, for 30 days. So I'll do that for you, Earl.
Oh, great, great. I really appreciate that. And I just want to say that, you know, always what you present to us on these webinars is just really excellent. I do have a quick one with Bob with Pittsburgh. If there is a dollar crisis and the dollar fails, how much physical silver should you have on hand to survive?
Well, that's a individual choice, and a great question. I think we'd all like the answer to that one. You know, it depends. There's a lot of variables, so I'll give a few of them. Number one, I mean, what's more important than silver or gold is, you know, water, food, and shelter, and energy. So, you know, depending where you are, if you are in, you know, the middle of a city, you've got a different requirement than if you're living in the country somewhere. But again, food, water, shelter, and energy are more important than how much silver you have. I mean, there's some people the belief that, silver and gold will buy you whatever you need if things collapse. And that's really not true. I mean, you can do a quick thought experiment. Let's say I want a steak really, really bad, and I'm willing to put up 100 ounces of silver to get a steak. We haven't had one in Spokane for 6 months, and I'm just dying to eat one. Well, it doesn't matter if I'm willing to put up 100 ounces of silver. If none exist, money won't solve that problem. That's an extreme example, but it just proves the point that, you know, money doesn't solve all these type of problems. As far as where the collapse goes, no one knows. I don't see it getting that bad. I see it getting really, you know, some areas where it gets, you know, quote unquote, really bad. Small pockets, probably in the bigger cities, where it could probably get unruly for a while. I think that's about the worst case. I mean, I'm a big believer in the human spirit. I'm the big believer that most people are good. None of us are perfect, but I do believe most people are basically good. I think when the times get tough, that the tough get going, as the expression is. I think most Americans in their heart of hearts are really, and the Canadians, I mean, most people I meet, you know, around the world are pretty much the same. I mean, I think they have strong moral structure, strong values, and will do the right thing in most cases. So I do see some very trying times ahead, and I do see the degradation of our society from a monetary aspect. I think we've been spoiled. I think we're overfed and undereducated. I think that a lot of that's going to turn around over time, and I believe that we're probably going to come out of it better for it. But I don't see really a total collapse where you'd have to go into a barter situation. I'm not ruling that out. I don't rule out anything. I mean, there's so much going on in today's world that I really strive to stay open-minded. So am I open to the idea that we could have an absolute total collapse? Yes, I am. What kind of percentage do I put on a total collapse? Not a real high one. I think, again, that there'll be areas that you will have pretty much that case, but I don't think it'll be global. I don't think it'll be, global for a very, you know, extended period of time. But again, I wouldn't rule it out entirely. I mean, there were the Dark Ages, and that's a fact. And could it happen again? Yes. Will it happen again? I doubt it. Will times get harder and tougher to get through? Yes. But again, I believe that, it's happened before in history and people have come through the other side. So if it happens again, to whatever degree, people will come out the other side.
Yeah, it sounds like, David, one of the ways that that can be looked at is there are multiple variables, and the probability of all of those multiple variables happening in the worst state all at once is pretty slim. But like you said, it's a possibility. And, you know, there are many things that are possible, but the probability may not be very much there. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, it is. I mean, even the Depression, which was pretty tough, there were a lot of millionaires made in the Great Depression, you know. And, of course, there was a lot of heartache, too. But, there's always opportunity. Again, the human spirit is pretty phenomenal. And if you don't focus, too much on the negative and just, accept reality. I'm not saying to, try to, think your way into some state that isn't, reality. Just live in the reality, but also in that reality, put one foot in front of the other and keep moving forward.
Certainly. Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate you being with us today. And, it's certainly you're the type of guest that we want to check in with from time to time, and so we'll keep the line of that open as time moves on. And so, because I know we're after the hour here, and I don't want to keep you too long. I know you're quite busy, and it's been a full day already. So I thank you very much, David. You might just real quickly give that contact information out again in case someone just joined us towards the end. That's, I believe it's silver-investor.com. And,
yeah, that's correct.
And I would...
I'll give a couple other things, Earl, while you got me. I actually thought of a couple more. one is I do have a YouTube channel. I'm very sporadic on it, but it's Silver Guru on YouTube. I do some videos from time to time. or you type my name into YouTube, you'll see a lot. You'll actually get to see a few of the lectures I've done. Some people have taped them and put them on there. Also, if you follow Twitter, which I've become a little more fond of, it's SilverGuru22. And that's a good way to get all the updates. Almost all those updates that I post every day are stuff that I've read and I think is important to read. So, and you don't have to get just obsessive about this thing. You can let me be obsessive about it. But, you know, if you do want to stay close to the markets, you might want to, you know, tune in every, I don't know, a couple times a week maybe and see what I've highlighted.
Great. Well, once again, Dave, thank you. Thank you for everyone that's listening. We'll have another really incredible program next week at the same time. So join us next Thursday. And I want everybody to have a great evening ahead. This officially ends our webinar. Good evening.